right? Like the saying of the Mass and the organizing of the sacramental life of the Church, which is for the good of all these people in purgatory and for the salvation of the people in the Church. So in return for spiritual services, they get this benefice, this piece of land, which is both political and economic power. In the feudal system in the Middle Ages, political and economic power go together, right? You own land, you own the serfs on the land. And then in the medieval Church, the political and economic power is tied up with spiritual power, right? Political, economic, spiritual are intertwined, inseparable. And that causes the whole dynamics of medieval Church politics. Now, that means, in fact, that bishops become involved in power politics. Power is a double-edged sort of thing. To have power is to enter into power politics, that is, to enter into competition with other people who have power, and you don't always win. To have power means that you've got powerful enemies. Power politics in the Middle Ages tied bishops up into competition with lords and kings and rulers. Several ways this happened. First of all, be aware about benefices. They're a very unusual kind of fief because, unlike your normal fief, they're not going to be passed on down through the family. Right? Bishops may have children, they often do, but they're not supposed to have children. Their children are not legitimate heirs. They cannot pass the benefice down to their children. So every time a bishop dies, the benefice becomes vacant. And it can be fought over. Who's going to occupy this benefice? Who's going to reap the wealth of this benefice? The king of the territory is going to want to have someone loyal to him. The pope is going to want to have someone loyal to him. The king doesn't want the bishop to be someone who is loyal to a foreign prince like the pope. Right? And the pope really is a foreign prince. And the benefice is wealth from this country. The local royalty do not want wealth from the country to be shipped abroad to Rome. And of course, the Pope does want wealth from these benefices to be shipped abroad to Rome. He actually claims as a right a kind of tax on the first year's income of the benefices. This tax is called annates, A-N-N-A-T-E-S. It's a special tax which, when you acquire a benefice, you pay this tax to the Pope. It's often a very hefty tax, right? So basically, you're paying the Pope for your benefice, right? You need a lot of money to pay the Pope so that you can acquire this benefice. And what that essentially means is that wealth from this country is going off to Rome. The Pope needs this wealth. The papacy is expensive, and the Pope is always looking for ways of increasing fundraising. So that's one of the things that is being fought over all the time in the Middle Ages. The Pope, in fact, is himself a temporal lord of no small stature. His benefice, in effect, is most of central Italy. He is the ruler of the Papal States. He is a prince. Let me just say, by prince in this lectures, what I mean is any territorial ruler, a duke, a margrave, these are all princes, not necessarily just a son of a king. The Pope is a prince in this sense. He rules over a large territory in Italy. He gets the income from that territory. He's involved in wars in Italy throughout the Renaissance. But he's also, of course, someone who has spiritual power, and that's his real claim to power. He is the Bishop of Rome. The Pope is a bishop, but the chief bishop. He's the successor of St. Peter, who is, by legend, the first bishop of Rome. And that makes him the chief of all the bishops because Peter was the chief of the apostles. So the Pope constantly calls himself by the name of Peter. As Peter, the Pope is the vicar of Christ. Right? Christ is in heaven. Christ is the head of the church in heaven. But the Pope is the head of the church on earth, the head of the body of Christ, the body of Christendom. All these Christian believers are one body, and the Pope is the head of that body on earth as representative of Christ, who's the head of that body in heaven. That means that the Pope claims a very special and supreme spiritual power. He's always, in fact, throughout the Middle Ages, claiming that the Pope's spiritual power is superior to any temporal power. Here's an example from 1302. Pope Boniface VIII publishes a document called Unam Sanctam, One Holy Church. And here's what he says about the power of the Pope.